Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning. I've got about another hour before I have to change that from good morning to good afternoon. Good morning, good morning, good morning. I am Norma Adams-Wade, your host, and you are watching and observing and listening to I Was Just Thinking. And as I always tell you, you are my co-host, and I stole that from Wendy Williams. We've got an exciting show today. I'm looking forward to our guest. We're going to get her on very, very soon, and you're going to be just as excited as I am when we talk with her. Let me tell you quickly about my mask. I wear my mask every Wednesday because I am determined to respect the health protocols from our health national health leaders. We're still wrestling with the pandemic and the variants and all of that. I wear it because I am in a building with other people, but I'm in a room by myself. And so while I'm in the room here, I am going to remove my mask. And then when I leave to go out back out into the public, I will put it back on. I'm going to bring on our guest as I tell you about her, because I don't want to use any more time before I get with her. And here she is. Hello, hello, hello. Don't say anything yet. Don't say anything yet. Everybody, this is Isis. And she is our very own Dallas area and national. She's a natural hair guru and freedom fighter. And she has just broken ground in so many areas that relate to natural hair care. And later on in the show, we'll talk to you about some of the things and obstacles she has overcome and was victorious through. But she is on today because she has written a book, and I can't wait to get my own copy. And I will tell you, I'll tell you the name of the book, and then she's going to tell you a little bit more about it. Let's see here. The name of it, here it is. And the name of it, anyway, I'll let her tell you about it. Actually, I've got so much stuff here in front of me, I can't even find the name of the book. I will leave that privilege to her. Good morning, good morning, good morning, Sister Isis. And you look beautiful, as you always do, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Morning to everyone.
Wonderful, wonderful. Just to give you a little bit about her, and we're not going to get into that right now, but at one point in time, I think it was some 20 years ago or so, the state tried to, they did prohibit her from braiding hair, if you can believe it. And she's going to later tell us how she overcame that. Let's see here. Well, I don't know. I am determined not to find the name of this book, but let me go ahead and have you to do that. Here it is. The book is Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories, and that's a play on the word of history, but she has coined it Hair Story 400 years later. So my first question to you is, Sister Isis, my first question to you is, what is this book about? And tell us about this interesting title. What's the book about?
Stolen Crown.
Okay.
It was dedicated to one of my clients that committed suicide because a licensed cosmetologist took out all of her hair in the crown. What he did was glued and weaved her hair. He permed and glued her hair. So it's a form of weaving. Glued her hair for 6 months straight. And the story, she gives me her story in the book. So when I met her, I asked her to give me her story. And this book has been in my belly, in my spirit, for over 25 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Finally, the timeline for everyone for Stolen Crown has caught up with everything that I've been putting together for the last 25 years.
Oh.
But it's Chandra Lewis, and there are a lot of different stories in there. I think that the audience will resonate with. There are stories about, you know, little girls that went to school and got their hair cut off. There's a little girl that just went to school just recently when school opened up, and one of the workers in the school cut all of her hair off. And she was biracial, and the parents are suing. This happened in, I want to say, Michigan, and the parents are suing the state, the city, the city, school district.
Okay.
I mean, for years, our crown has been taken away from us. We have so many issues with losing our hair, with alopecia. We have the issues with eczema, seborrhea, and there was a time in history where we were not allowed to look in the mirror and adorn. And so our ancestors left over dishwater just because it contained oils, and they would use that to condition their hair when they were not seen conditioning. So the thing with us today, we're trying to figure out ways to grow our hair, to love our hair, and to condition. The stolen connected to our antennas. It is the same way the trees grow. They grow up to the heavens. Our up to the heavens.
Your sound is kind of going in. Your sound is going in and out. I don't know if there's anything you can do to correct that, but you're kind of going in and out.
I'm sorry.
Well, now that might be better like that. Yeah,
I'm having to hold my own phone.
Oh,
I'm in Pittsburgh. And
what
so
are you doing in Pittsburgh?
Healing through the hair.
Oh, my.
For the Stolen Crown. Yes, introducing different techniques and different oils and different minerals.
How long will you be there?
Until Monday.
Okay. Well, very good. Very good. Now, you were telling us that the idea, I guess, came to you like 20 or 25 years ago. Was that an itching desire through that quarter century, and how did you finally pick up the pen for the first time to begin to record this book? How did you go from just that itching desire to actually putting pen to paper?
I had been collecting. I had been collecting stories for years. Everyone that would come to my temple, I would ask them about their hair story, because everything was like, my hair won't grow, my hair is falling out, I'm losing my hair, I just had a baby, postpartum syndrome, postpartum problems, I need help. So I would have everybody that came back in the day to write down what they were experiencing. And then we did some things to help them move forward. And when the Crown Act came and I saw that there was a real serious issue with people understanding that racism is still alive in the school.
We lost your sound. Okay. Now you're back.
Our people are still trying to be accepted. And when I saw in 2015, 16, 17, 18, a lot more of this politicizing with African hair was prevalent, and then people started to speak out. Back in the day, there were people like that would come to me, like the police chief of Dallas, who had to cut, I think his name was Chris, I'm not sure his last name, but he had to cut his locks off because he couldn't be a police chief. And there were women that were on the police force, and there were women in the military that were also asked to take their locks out or to remove their afros. So this caught up with today's society. People are wanting to understand more about these stories. We have to tell our stories, and we have to be proactively on the front line. Wear natural. I can hear you.
Okay. Why do you feel that hair is such an essential part? And it seems that it's really not only African American culture, but it seems like almost a natural social issue for a number of ethnic groups. I'm even remembering about the story of Samson in the Bible and how hair was such a central part of that biblical story. And of course, we see all of the television commercials about millions and millions of hair products for women of all ethnic groups. Why do you think hair is so essential in our society? And we're kind of freezing, but I know you're going to come back. You're frozen right now, but we'll be patient. We'll be patient. Okay, let's see. I don't know how long this freeze situation is going to, but let me just remind everybody while we're waiting for the technology to come back that we are talking with Isis Brantley, and we know her as a natural hair guru and freedom fighter. So we're going to see if we can help out with the situation here. And she has written a new book, and the book is Stolen Crown. Okay, we're kind of getting you back, but you are
here.
Okay, we're trying to wait until we can actually hear you.
Tell her to go out and come back in.
Okay, I'm being told to tell you, can you go out and come back in because you're still frozen? Can you tune out and then come back in? Because you are frozen. Try that. Try to sign off and sign back in again. And we'll try to see if we can get you. We're going to keep trying to
Okay, so now I'm going to put it back in.
Okay, we're going to try to reconnect with you. And everybody, again, we are talking with Isis Brantley, and she has written a new book, and the book is called Stolen Crown. And of course, we know in our culture, we refer to our hair as our crown. It makes us kind of a royalty. And of course, it goes to our African culture from the motherland. And for centuries, African women have done all kinds of stylish braiding. And Isis is a, she's a guru at that. And she has a vastly widespread clientele, a lot of well-known people as well as us average Joes and Joannes. She's just very expert at it. So, Isis, if you can hear me, can you try to call in on this phone number that I'm about to give you? Try to call in to 646-200-0459. See if you can call us on that number because we're having trouble with you coming through. The number is 646-200-0459. And we're going to see if we can get to communicate with you that way. 646-200-0459. Well, you know I can't help.
Oh, my God.
Well, that might have been the end of that link.
Okay. Where? Why isn't it letting me in?
Because if it ended, that might have, we might, we can't do a new link because she's not where we can send her a link.
I get to go home and take a nap. Oh, Mama,
Mama,
I screwed you up.
All right. I am not upset. I am not upset.
I'm going to be in a world of trouble. Why is it not letting?
But see, she was out of town and on her phone.
Okay.
She was out of town and she was using her phone.
Okay.
So she really didn't have enough
the host can
power.
See you. Okay, wait a minute. What? You are the host. What's going on? Okay, hold on. This don't make sense.
Oh, let me see if I can call her on her phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, we lost the transmission. Marva, could you try to call us on the Block Talk telephone number that I can give you? I can text it to you. You probably have a minute. Yeah, you got something to write it down?
Yo, everybody, come get your bounce on.
Okay,
get your bounce on. Don't be cute with it. You got to get, come on. Fifth one. Fourth one. Come on. Bring it.
When I come by to think of you, reminisce on all the things you do. I can't imagine my life without you. It's like paradise now.
What's
it? I never knew I'd be so happy. I never knew I'd be so proud.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, and I can hear you.
Okay, so.
So we're going to continue. Let's see. Let me see if I can.
So now we're going to ask her.
Can I can turn the sound up.
Okay.
Okay.
Ask her, can she also, while she's talking to us,
mm-hmm.
can she go back to StreamYard?
Okay, while we're talking. I'm told to ask you if you can try to log back in to the link while we're talking, and I don't want to overload your mind because I don't think I'd be able to maneuver because I am
no,
not.
No, neither will I. I'm not either. I'm 63
oh, okay.
at lost.
Neither will I. Okay. We will just continue our conversation.
I can ask someone to do it. I guess Joe can make whatever you want
yeah,
me to do. I can ask him to do it.
Again, we will continue to talk. And then
what do you want him to do?
To try that link again. Try to see if he can tune into that link again.
Okay, let me ask him to get my audience to tune in, if he can get them to tune in to the link.
He needs to tune you in to it as well.
Okay, and tune me in too. As well. Okay.
But while you're doing that, and if you want me to, I can give you a little time to catch your breath on it. But one of the points I wanted to ask, just even the story that you told about the woman who literally took her life because of her hair loss, that rips your heart out. And again, that goes to my point about emotionally how we are tied to the importance of our crown. And that is such a vibrant term because that it is indeed a crown. But that really illustrates how we can get so caught up emotionally with our hair. But I wonder, was there a part of the book that was difficult? Maybe even parts of the book that were difficult for you to write and to recall. Were there?
Well, the book is about true hair stories, true black hair stories, and the reason we're so tied to our hair is because it is our spirituality, and that's the difference. There's only three different types of hair on the planet. That's Caucasian, Asian, and Afro. The Afro hair has been the most oppressed in the world, not just in this country, but in the world. And the Afro hair is very significant because our ancestors use patterns and styles and numbers and different types of texture of art, like different art patterns to describe different things. There was a time where there was a pattern that was used during slavery where we could understand if the energy was moving our people more north or what was coming to us. Our hair is connected to our inner souls. Our hair goes up like trees. Like I said, it spirals like our DNA. It spirals like everything in the universe. And that's why melanated hair is so significant, and now the mixed babies and the biracial children are filling it all over the country because they're mixed and they have this dominant gene where afro hair is created from their scalps. So that's
wow.
the difference between all other hair. Hair is not just hair. That's something they teach in cosmetology. Oh, hair is not, the hair is just hair. But black hair is dull, and black hair is dirty, and black hair is hard to manage. And these are things that we've had to live with for 400 years in this country,
wow.
in this world, and
yeah.
continue to live with it today.
Still following that thought about the difficulty of recalling some of these emotional stories, at any point when you were recording these different hair stories, did you get discouraged, or how did you emotionally
buffer yourself? I never did. I never got discouraged. I wanted the world to know. I wanted
yeah.
the secrets to be revealed.
Uh-huh.
I, as a little girl, knew that just because what I saw on TV, I wasn't going to try to mimic that for long. I did what my mom wanted me to do in her house because we had to look a certain way. I never got discouraged about my own beauty. And when I went to college, I learned that there was a lot of discrimination against African beauty, and that made me want it more. Soul
mm-hmm.
Train made me want it more. Seeing
yeah.
African people all over the world with afros and twists and braids made me want to love myself more. So I never got discouraged. I was ahead of the people. I was ahead of the time. I'm a forefather. I saw what we needed to see. And people had to experience it on their own. They had to be kicked off of their jobs and told they had to wear a wig, told that they weren't able to wear cornrows and afros to school, to graduate, to get degrees. So people
right.
now know that there is a war waged against afro hair in this world. And so,
yeah.
no, I never got discouraged at all.
And you didn't, and I wanted to go back to the 20 or 25 years. Did you have a writing schedule, like when, and I don't know if COVID played a part in really pushing you forward on this, whether it opened up some time for you to write, but was there a routine, that you followed, like getting up early in the morning or staying up late at night, or how did you go about actually, putting pen to paper, with these various stories? What was your routine?
Honestly, I had the books already ready. I have three more books that are coming out. I've
coming out. Oh, my God. Or are these
yes.
continuations on this theme or totally different aspect of the theme?
Well, one of them is dedicated to my daughter, Olayinka. So it's Olayinka's Nappy Hair and the African Beaded Comb. And she takes the children who are subjugated with negative terms and negative behavior from others, from parents, from the home, from the schools about their hair, and she takes them on a journey to America to find the beautiful mirror and the African beaded comb, because the African comb never came with us, only the European comb. So I've been putting these thoughts together for a long time, but COVID did help me, the reset. When Mother Nature say, now we're not moving forward, everybody sits still. That gave me an opportunity to move forward on these projects. But I have been putting these thoughts together since then. The other book that's coming out is about my courage and my victory with the state of Texas. And I'm going to do that book because I want to see it on film. But this is something that I was called to do. I am a social entrepreneur, and I solve problems in my community by teaching the art of healing through the hair and helping people to gain understanding of their own innate gifts, and taking the comb and the ideas of adorning black hair to a bigger platform where people can have residual, people can have money, and they can work for themselves. So this book is going to explain a lot about what I went through for 20 years under the state and what it looked like for my clients, for my children, for my sanity. All of that is going to come out in the book. So I just want to say that these are stolen history, and this crown has been stolen. I mean, it's the same crown that you find in the pyramids in Kemet and Nubia in ancient Egypt. These are great mothers. These are mothers that wore different headpieces and different crowns and braided their hair. There are different tribes in Africa that braid for political reasons or social reasons or ceremonial reasons. This history of hair is important because it is the closest thing to the spirit of God and the way our hair grows and what is connected to our DNA and what's connected to the spirals that we possess. And we've been taught to hate it. We've been going through, you know, many different people that capitalize off of black hair, the need to fix it, the need to make it better. The only thing that needs to be fixed is the system. The system is broken. There were times where they would have the kink killer because they would say, you know, we need to kill the kinks from these melanated people, these indigenous people that hair grows differently from ours. So our hair do grow differently. There's so many different stories. During the Marcus Garvey time, there were stories where Marcus Garvey would, you know, make sure that he was rallying around natural hair. He said, no, you don't take the kinks out of your hair. You take the kinks out of your mind. And there were people that were standing up against the racist policies and rules as it related to the identity and culture of black people.
Right. Speaking of stories, I want to go back to what you were telling us about one of the central characters or stories in the book, the story of Chandra Lewis. Let's revisit that a little bit more. Did you know her personally? How did you find out what was going on with her? How did you find out that she had made this horrible decision to end her life? Were there many people in her family affected by her decision? Tell us more about Chandra Lewis. And for the audience, she took her own life after she lost her hair with a terrible occurrence. Give us a little bit more about what you knew about her and how this came about.
Yes, ma'am. Chandra Lewis sought me out through just the community saying, this is the queen of braids. I had like a ministry of healing through the hair. And so she came because she wanted to come and figure out if there was something that I could do to her hair. And when she came into the salon, she said to me, you're not going to laugh at me, are you? I said, laugh at you for what? And she said, well, I need to show you because I do consultations first so that I can see what's going on with a person's
right.
hair. And she said, I need to show you my hair. And I said, sure, no, I'm not going to laugh at you. And so she took her wig off and all of hair at the crown was missing. Like there was no hair. It was literally pulled out, what we call traction alopecia. And it was all gone. But she had hair right around from ear to ear, all the way around the back. I said, well, Chandra, what we could do is start using some different oils and massaging your scalp and activating your follicles, and I can do a style to cover it. And what I did was a lacing style. This is the first time I met her, and we had a long conversation about her trying. She said, I was so devastated when this happened. The man that did it, he didn't want to talk about it. And then my family was, you know, telling me that, you know, I could never look the same in public again, and I just started feeling really bad about myself. So she tried to kill herself when it first happened, and she said she forgot to put the bullets in the gun. And this is what she was telling me when I first met her. I said, well, we don't want to do that. Let's just try to do something that will make you happy. And I think I have the style for you. So I did this beautiful style, and she was happy because you couldn't see where the hair was missing. And I said, you promised me never to do that again. And she said, I promise. I mean, we had a very beautiful relationship. Too much she wanted the style. And then she came back for her second style so that she could get it again for another. That was the time that Saturday I did her hair. And we were talking, you know, she was like, take care of yourself. I said, and you take care of yourself, and I want to be here for you. And anything you need, let me know. And she said, sure, walking out the door. And I did her hair on the Saturday she left. That Monday, I got the call from her family saying that Chandra Lewis had committed suicide. And the mother asked me, did I know anything that she was dealing with mentally? And and did she have any traumas or anything going on? And I said, yes, it was her hair. And she had recently gotten married, and her husband was making fun of her hair. You call it bald-headed, you know, names and stuff like that. So I had to go to the funeral home just to see if this lady really killed herself. And I saw my hairstyle on her lying in the casket. And I said, Chandra, you promised me.
What period was this? What period, what year, roughly what year was this, roughly?
She committed suicide in 19, I think it was right after my arrest with the state of Texas. I'm going to say 1999 was the year that she decided to go.
Wow.
And during that time, there was
a
lot of
telling that story, it made me think, when we're in the moment of depression and we can't see beyond our face, now women proudly are sporting baldness. Baldness is
they
now
have
beautiful.
To. They have to become aware that there's a deeper spirit inside. And if your hair has been removed, there's a lot of people whose hair has just totally been removed from different techniques like braiding and weaving and things like that, glue, chemicals, those type of things. And so they have to come to, if they're going to live, they have to decide, okay, I've lost my hair and I've got to go bald and have to love it, you know? So that
and
is
so
happening
women,
all over
women,
the country
yeah,
right
I just
now.
Feel so proud to see those of us, particularly of our culture, walking around females with bald hair, but heads high, shoulders back, pleasant
right.
expressions
Absolutely.
On our face. But you are so right, Iris, Isis, that it's from within. Continue on with that thought. It's from within.
Because your divinity is very, very much so present. And sometimes with what I see that this industry has done to the black woman and the woman of color is to rob her of everything that sits high up on her crown. And they've taken another they're taking another I guess you would say war tactic against black women now with you know so many different things and just to you know the way we raise babies, the way we raise our children, how we have the babies, if we can do natural births or not. It's just so many different things that's going on right now, and I'm happy to see that black women are realizing that the beauty is within. And if we are victims of hair loss, which this industry has done to us with sodium hydroxide and our children that are most wanted by these chemicals and companies that make billions of dollars off of us, we just have to think positive and do what is necessary for us to live and continue to move forward. It was not, you know, it was not legal to be seen in public with nappy hair or with natural hair or with curly hair or with afro.
Think about it.
Yeah, you
can
be
seen that makes me think about the news, African-American news commentators, somewhat 20 years ago.
One of those stories is in my book too.
Tell us the story.
The sister, the meteorologist. I can't think of her name right now because I'm thinking so fast in my head.
Right.
But she was told that she could not wear her hair short on TV, and
right.
I think they made. Her, a lot of people ridiculed her and criticized her for the way she wore her hair. Black hair is deemed unprofessional. So a lot of people are winning now because they are standing up for their rights. She just, you know, went on and never complained about it anymore, but let the community know and her followers know that she felt that she was treated unfairly. And she was. And her story is in the book. There's so many stories in the book that I had to put together because it's time that we tell our stories. It's
absolutely
time for us
and,
to write
and
out.
That brings me to current day, the FAA, commentator Tara Parker, she proudly wears a variety of natural hairstyles, and she has that self-confident air about her.
That's because we made it.
Say it again.
Look, if we don't remember the elders and the forefathers and those trailblazers that came before us, that and think that, oh, I just all of a sudden became 32 and I'm proud of myself. No, we have to remember those that came before us. And the reason people like Tashara and others can stand firmly is because of 20 years and then 20 years before that and then centuries before that, that our people have been speaking out. It is we are uprooting all this negativity about our identity. We are coming into the love of self right now. But yes, there are new babies that are being born that are being more courageous about self-identity. And I thank her for being courageous and standing on the front line for us. But there are many people that have stood on the front line and kept these doors open. That's why we have Bill 2717. And people have to realize that if we are not following the ways of our ancestors, the ways of our elders, then we're missing something because nothing is new under the sun.
Absolutely it's not. While it's on my mind, and we're still going to continue our conversation, but let's go ahead and tell our audience how to get the book. Where is it available? How can they get it right online? Give us the information on how to get the book. And again, audience, the book is Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories, a play on the word of history, but it's Black Hair Stories. 400 years later, that's 400 years after leaving the motherland and coming to this land. So how can we get the book? And we're going to come back and continue our conversation.
You can get the book on Amazon.com, and you can also get the book if you're anywhere in the Metroplex in Dallas. I would do, I would sign the book for you, and you can also purchase the book from my salon at 17290 Preston. I always have them. And I'm looking to put them in different stores.
We will put that address in the chat. But you're saying at your son, and did you say 17290?
Amazon, 17290 Preston, and Amazon, and then the books will be at Pan-African Connection, and in Houston, they will be at the Black Bookstore, and I think one little little red shop also in Houston. So there are several places that you will be able to get the book, but if you want the book today, just Amazon.com.
Okay, so let me review what we said. You can get it through Amazon.com. You can go on today and get 400 years later. You can also go to ISIS Salon, and that is called the Institute for African for Ancestral Breeding. Is that correct?
Correct. Naturally ISIS.
Okay, so let's say that again. You can go to the, this is ISIS Salon. It's called Institute for Ancestral Institute for Ancestral Braiding, and the address is 17290 Preston Road, and I think you're in Suite 104. Is that correct?
That's correct. And on the door, you'll see Salon 972, and then you'll see Naturally ISIS, I-O-A-B. So you can't miss it.
Okay. And you will see Naturally ISIS. That's another one of her identifiers. And I believe your email address, if someone wants to email you, is Naturally ISIS
at yahoo.com.
And is Naturally ISIS all together?
Naturally ISIS is all together.
Okay, Naturally ISIS, that's I-S-I-S, Naturally ISIS at yahoo.com. If you want to email Isis and ask her, you know, the question. And your salon phone number, correct me if this is not correct, your salon or a number where to contact you and your salon, 214-329-3820, is that correct?
Correct.
Let me repeat that. A way to contact Isis and her salon by phone, cell phone or any phone, 214-329-3820. Okay, very good. Now, let me just bring the audience back up to date what we're doing. We are having a wonderful conversation with Isis Brantley, and she is our Dallas area's own natural hair guru and freedom fighter for the privilege of African American women of African descent to wear our natural kinky hairstyle with pride. And we're going to get a little bit more into how she had to fight for this right for us to be so proud and to for women to be able to give braiding our very creative braiding hairstyles. Now, move to the second part of our conversation with you about the experiences that you had with the state of Texas. And you are a trailblazer in bringing about the privilege of being able to do braiding without that cumbersome license. Tell that story the way you tell it. Let me just kind of set the stage. You had been braiding hair for a number of years, and one day these plain clothes officers, you not knowing what they were, in your salon. Tell us what happened and what that was all about.
Okay, so first of all, I want to say that my fight is about economic opportunity and economic freedom for those that chooses a different trade, like braiding and the art of braiding. So I was fighting for the right for people to braid in their kitchens, to be kitchen beauticians, to braid in their homes, because it was illegal to do that in the state of Texas, and for people to be able to teach the next generation ancestral braiding. So the main thing is everybody is eating right now. Everyone is feeding their families. They're able to open up salons, work with cosmetologists, open up their own natural hair schools separate from the government. That is what the law did for us. It all happened. I had already been braiding in my home for 10 years. And, you know, in the papers, the community, you know, they gave me this title of Queen of Braids and all of that. Beauty salons all around were sending people beauty schools. Black beauty schools and other beauty schools were connecting with me and sending people to me to actually braid their hair. The beauty schools are the ones that conspired against me to take my name to the state of Texas. So we won't talk about that. But one day I decided to come out of my home. Okay, I am free. You know, I want to get a salon. I want to open up. I want to make it legal. And I want to start braiding. So when I decided that that was something, and there's something that's prior to that that's going to be in the next book that's coming out, the third book that's coming out, I went into my salon, and then one of the state inspectors came in. This was during that week that I opened up, and she said, you know, you're violating Texas law. You cannot be braiding in here. And she bogarted into the salon. She started picking up flyers, and she got on my phone. And she called, and these were landlines at that time, not a cell phone. She picks up the phone and calls the state of Texas and say, I got her. I caught her red-handed. She is braiding hair up. I took the phone away from her and nicely but aggressively ushered her out of my shop. I said, you got to go. You can't come and do that. And then she grabbed the flyer off the thing, and I took the flyer from her and sent her on out the door. The
right.
next thing I knew, like a week or so later, two plain clothes women came into the shop and said that they wanted, one of them said, I want to get an appointment to get on your calendar to get my hair done.
You did not know they were plain clothes officers. You just thought they were clients, potential clients.
Exactly. I thought they were clients. I mean, because, you know, she said I knew her, I knew of her sister. I did her family's hair. And it just seemed so natural what she was saying. So I had clients there. I had clients from, I had a reporter there from Fort Worth. I was doing her hair. And then I had a couple of other clients there. And before I know it, she said, she pulled me closer. She said, Isis, honestly, I'm here because you're going to jail for braiding hair. And I'm looking at her, and I never paid attention to the lady that was standing with her, but the way she was posed, her body language said authority. It said, you know, officer. But I didn't pay attention to that. And I was just, you know, had my energy and my my listening ear with the one lady that was telling me that she wanted to get on the calendar. And
right.
then she said, I'm serious. I said, no, you can't be serious. She said, no, Isis, I'm serious, and pulled out a badge. By this time, seven white cops, full clothes cops with their uniforms on, came into the shop and said, you're going to jail. And she was talking to me really nicely. She said, Isis, I know I hate to do this, but you've got to go to jail for braiding. And she said, please don't fight them. This is what I need you to do. Just, I need you to comply. Let them handcuff you and take you on to Loose Ferry.
Oh, my God.
What the? Is going on here? And I asked her, I said, well, can I please call somebody to find my five children so that when they get out of school, because one of my daughters was going to Hockaday, I need somebody to go and pick up my children. And she said, well, I'll let you make that phone call. And I made the phone call. And then after that, they carted me off, threw me in the back of the seat, and took me to jail. And I was strip searched, fingerprinted. They made me take my clothes off. They did all their little thing that they do for a real criminal to me, and then put me in the jail with a lot of other people. So I had to call for help. At that point, I didn't know why I was being arrested. They said, you are in here because you were braiding without a cosmetology license. And then another person said, we don't know why you're here. We're looking at, you know, the paperwork, and it doesn't tell us why you're here. And so all that was going on, and I was praying and, you know, hoping that someone would come and get me. And finally, I found a lawyer, Thelma Clardy, who had been a client of mine well. I remember I called her, and she arranged to get me out. And believe it or not, after she got me out, these people gave me a full-fledged trial. Like, they put me on trial in Dallas. And I had jurors and everything to prove that I had broken a European law because I didn't have a European permission slip to do what my ancestors have done long before Europeans.
Wow.
And
wow.
I lost the trial, and they made me pay a fine. And during that time, Coma Cottrell was the chairperson of the board at that time, and he is the one that told Judge Jones to write up the paperwork for me to go to jail. And he basically, you know, told his wife, who had been a client of mine. I have been doing a lot of celebrities, a lot of progressive black women and men in the community, a lot of white people too. I have been doing people that had stores and different businesses that were Anglo. I was doing their hair and everything. But anyway, he told his wife that she could never come. And then all of the beauty salon schools, beauty schools had pictures of me handcuffed and would tell all their students not to come near me for years, because if they didn't want to go to jail like I did, they would stay away from me. But they had my pictures posted in renowned beauty college in Fort Worth. Just all of this stuff was just, I don't know why we felt that we needed to be confused about why we have the right to be who we are. You can never turn a sheep
into an elephant. I don't care what you do. It will always remain a sheep, and they're both animals. You can't change us into somebody else. We are who we are, and we deserve the right. We've been doing the art of braiding, and cultural significance and competency has been a part of our legacy forever. How dare you say I'm going to jail for doing natural hair, something that doesn't include, I don't use sharp instruments, I'm not using chemicals. Everything you teach in your schools is to alter the natural state.
And the whole point was to force you to fit into the existing system that really did not apply to our cultural ancestral practices. The existing system did not apply to our culture. As you said, we have been doing this for centuries and centuries. It's indwelled in us. But now let's go ahead and then two decades passed, I believe, if I'm correct, while you fought. You fought this tooth and nail and made it through this ostracism, people ostracizing you. And like you said, telling people to stay away from you, stay away from your salon and what have you. And then the tide sort of began to change. Tell us about when you began to kind of see a little light at the end of the tunnel. How did that come about?
Well, after the state of Texas was suing me, after I just, you know, after they put an injunction on the building and I had to shut down, and then I had the trial, and then they started back suing me because I just wouldn't comply, and then we countersued them. That's what the first lawyer was helping me do. And after about from 1997 all the way to 2007, that's the first half of my story and my freedom. For braiding. That went on for those 10 years. They kept going back and forth, and they said, you know what, we're not fighting you anymore. In 2007, they said, we're going to grandfather you in because we couldn't find anyone to teach you braiding. I said, grandfather me in. Okay. So they said, but we're going to keep the law at 35 hours, which they had stolen my curriculum in all the hearings I had. They had their the lady that takes the notes and everything, writing down everything, and they made a curriculum identical to my curriculum for people that they were trying to get to take the 35 hours. And I said, who's going to teach these 35 hours of natural hair care in your system? And finally, the community and the entrepreneurs that were trying to, you know, get training and doing other type of techniques in other cities and states, they figured out, like, if I get a certification from Joanne Cornwell to do Sister Lux, I can't even do it in Texas. I can't even practice. After I've paid all my money to become certified to do this, I can't even do it in my home. So they figured out, and they started pushing back on the state and telling them that it's unfair. They were going to take the 35 hours, but then they were coming to me to get the true training after complying with the state. So to make a long story short, they grandfathered me in after that, but then they said, we're grandfathering you to go ahead and do your salon and provide the service, but we will not allow you to the next generation. And I said,
let me interrupt you right there. I forget, who was governor at that period of time in 2007? When they did his grandfather,
I don't remember. I would have to
remember either who was governor in 2007. It might have been. I forget how long Abbott has been in, but it might have been Abbott.
Was it Greg Abbott? But he's the one that signed the second half of my story, Bill.
He came in for the second half. So it might have been George Bush or Wick, might have been Rick Perry, one of those individuals. But
Rick
I'm sure
Perry.
They did
that
very reluctantly awesome. That first time.
Oh, it probably was. It was Rick Perry. That is exactly was. It was Rick Perry. Yep.
Okay.
It sure was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after that, they told me I couldn't teach. In order to teach, I had to become a barber, and I had to go to barbering school, and
oh
I had to become a barbering instructor, and I had to have 25 square feet building to facilitate a school or whatever. So I went through all type of – it was just so much being – so many, you know, things that were being put up, so many blockages, just so many things to stop me. So I was down in Austin lobbying for myself because I realized that, you know, people that are down here are, you know, they're creating a connection with the different politicians and they are getting them to rule in their favor. So let me go see if I can get someone to rule in my favor. And I met Arif Panju with the Institute for Justice, and he walked up to me. I didn't know him, but he knew me. When he saw me, he said, "We've been following your story. I just would like to speak to you more about representing you." And that was
the last name again. I missed the name. Say the name again. I missed it.
Arif.
The attorney's name that you just mentioned.
Arif, A-R-I-F, Panju, P-A-N. J-U, Panju.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And so introduced me to the Institute for Justice, and my sister family and brother family in D.C., Pamela Farrell and Talib Dean Ugda, they were in court with me when I had my trial. And they were the ones that were found guilty for braiding first, way before it came south. They were found guilty for braiding and had to shut down. And then they got together and started a movement to help women like Pamela herself and myself and so many others find this institute, this libertarian law firm. Nonprofit law firm to help them. And so they had been telling me about the Institute for Justice, and I just so happened to meet Panju, and he said that he wanted to take on my story. And so he did, and got to go back and forth to the hearings again. My life has been nothing but hearings. I neglected my children in the way that I should have neglected them because I was always fighting for not only my rights but the rights for people in the state of Texas to, you know, economic opportunities and the right to, you know, be their own bosses and the right to do their own children's hair and family hair. So I went to court with another judge, Judge Sam Sparks.
Okay.
And this was almost going into Christmas time, so it was sometime in November in 2014. And basically, you know, the state of Texas was trying to say to him, how dare you even consider giving her the right to braid hair and deregulate the braiding in the state of Texas. And so he basically just told them, look, what she's doing is older than me, and I'm the oldest person in this courtroom, in this room right now. And state of Texas, this is what he was saying, you find me that school that you say that she needs to have. I need to see where's your school. Where is your ancestral braiding school? I need to see it. If you can show me your school where you already have something in place for her, then I'll think about what you're saying. But if you don't have anything in place for her, it makes no sense for you to be asking her to have something that you don't even have.
Wow.
So he gave them to December something, and they came back and say, you know, there's no such thing. There's no such school. And so I won my ruling with Judge Sam Sparks. He said that it was unconstitutional for them to discriminate.
What year was that roughly? What year roughly was that? 2014. Yeah, that was 2014. And that was a big, huge victory. Was it not? Was there still some legal steps you had to take at that point? Or was that the crying point right there?
No, because Judge, Governor Greg Abbott didn't sign the bill until 2015. And when they did, I think I won unanimously. So they had to, you know, go through the proper procedures and that in the proper, you know, legislative process. And they did. So I won unanimously in the House and I won unanimously in the Senate. And at the time, the guy that brought my case to the House was Craig Goldman, Representative Craig Goldman, and he represented me. And then there was a white guy that brought my case to the Senate, but Senator Royce West, he hijacked the Senate ruling for me and wanted to be the one in position to present it. And this is so funny because in the Senate hearing, the white guy spoke up and said, I did carry that bill first, but now, you know, Senator Royce West has the bill, and I think he took it from me or something like that. And then Senator West said, no, I didn't take it from him, whatever. But I won and unanimously, and there was people in the community that had already been fined thousands of dollars for braiding a barber school at the time. All this is going to be in the movies, going to be in the book too. But this barber, this African barber at the time, was actually for 20 years he was braiding hair in the barbering school as though it was legal. They were braiding hair in the cosmetology school, Velma Beans, as though it was legal. So all of that came out that all was illegal, and he got fined a lot of money. They shut down like hundreds of braiding shops in the state of Texas, fined them a lot of money, like the ladies in Tennessee that have been fined over $100,000 for braiding in this industry right now. This is going on right today. And then the ladies that worked in their homes, they also were threatened with jail time, and they were fined as well. So once I won unanimously in both House and the Senate, it was nothing left but for Governor Greg Abbott to sign the bill, and he did, and told me that he, you know, he wanted to sign the bill for me because he believed in economic opportunities, and he wanted to, you know, have something special for me and host the party. This man probably has never shaken the hand of anyone that looked like me, but he was just so kind, and he shook my hand, and we took pictures, and you know, they celebrated it. Yeah, because
it's
a victory for
everyone. What year again? What year did he sign it?
2015.
That, okay, very good. Now, there are so many aspects of your life and your community involvement. I want you to tell us a little bit about some of the various other things that come out of African culture that you're involved in. I forget all the terminologies, but you have one where you do I think it relates to the annual solstice, and you do various cleansing.
Yes.
Tell us about that aspect of your life. How did you get into that? And I, like I said, I forget all the terminologies, but bring us, and let me tell everybody, audience, we are having a riveting conversation with Isis Bradley, and she's telling us about her experiencing as a hair braider and how the state of Texas fought her tooth and nail because they wanted her to confine herself to the way the state was set up to license people who do hair. But her argument was that ancestral braiding is exactly that. It's an ancestral culture that we deserve the right to practice as we have done for centuries. And that the title of her book, Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories, a play on the word history, hair stories, 400 years later. That's from our coming across the Atlantic to this land. Tell us about some of the annual solstice practices, the cleansing. How did you get into all of that, and what are some of those activities that we can I'm assuming that the public, now that we're kind of having a little more freedom from the pandemic, are there any plans yet to begin any of those again, or are we still sort of on hold from some of those annual practices?
Well, you know, I think about those practices are all indigenous to us, and so we've always followed the solar system. We've always followed the planets. We've always, you know, Harriet Tubman knew how to, you know, free the people and take them in the direction that they needed to go by, you know, looking at the stars. Our people have always been connected to nature. And when I was growing up, I didn't even realize it until I started to open up to nature, natural beings, natural energy, natural connection with the universe and with Mother Nature, and how we're one in the same. I was able to see my mom always be very clean, just keeping everything smelling so clean, and those little white mothballs were all over the house. She would do these ritual cleansings of the walls and all of those things that we now are opening up our spirits and souls to during this pandemic. We should have always been careful about the germs and things that we spread. So when we look at nature, the season, the changing of the different seasons, we look at the spring equinox as something that we want to remember in terms of, or we want to celebrate in terms of a new beginning, like being fertile, being able to lay many eggs, to create wealth, to create love. It's a very beautiful time where you connect with family. And that's what we do in the spring. We go to the river. I remember times of my mother's, you know, and my grandmother's, you know, church, and how they would always baptize us at the church. You don't find too many churches that do baptisms and things like that, how they would go to the river, how their grandparents and their great-grandparents will always go to the river. So during the spring, we go to the spirit that represent kindness, that represent love and art and beauty and culture, that also represents the spirit of, you know, getting yourself connected with your body, getting your body in alignment with things that you want. It's during the time where love is expressed, where people are getting pregnant, procreation. It's a time where you can start again. You can start all over again by letting go of everything that was in the fall or that was in the winter, letting it go, and reconnecting yourself to something higher, something greater, something more that will bring happiness and love and joy into your life. So that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years at the river, calling the community together and cleansing away all old, bad, negative, aggressive energy, and taking the spring and planting and creating new, you know, really, very wholesome seeds that we're planting into the soil so that we can grow graciously, and we can grow, you know, love, and we can grow in love, and we can walk in love, and we can walk in beauty. These are things that we do around that time.
Period of time was this again? Is it like March or something? What period of the year is that?
Yes. This is around it's around Easter.
It represents around the time of Easter.
Yeah,
March, April,
around,
yeah.
Yeah, March and April.
And the river,
yeah,
the river that you have kind of chosen, and again, I don't remember when the most recent ceremony was, but it was somewhere related to the Trinity River that you chose as a site. Am I correct?
Trestle Trail. Mm-hmm. Trestle Trail, Trinity River.
Trestle,
yeah. There's a lot.
Trestle Trail. That's correct. Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of our ancestors and spirits and loved ones in the Trinity River. Nobody talks about that, but there's just so much that goes on. But what we're trying to do is realign our spirits out there. But we, at that time, during that period, we show love. We demonstrate love. We cleanse and we renew our souls and our spirits so that we can walk in, you know, we can walk in appreciation and we can walk in gratitude. So that's why we do that around this. Now there's another one coming up. And I am probably not going to be doing anything, but it's the Day of the Dead, where it's an African winter solstice practice with the mother of the dead, you know, the spirit of the dead. And, and it's what the Europeans now call Halloween. So the Day of the Dead is always a reverence for the Latino community, the Hispanic community, and the spirit of transformation, the spirit of the wind, the spirit of the dead is also a part of African tradition, and we have people all over the continent, all over the world that still pay homage to their ancestors. So it's about your ancestors. It's not about putting razor blades in an apple and feeding it to children. It's about, you know, celebrating your ancestors, celebrating your bloodline, celebrating those that meant something to you, those that left the legacies here, celebrating the mothers, celebrating the temples, and all those things that we can remember, if we can remember that we are connected to. But it's not all this spooky stuff with, you know, finding people, terrorizing other people. I don't know, but some people just like to make it something other than what it is. But it's a day where you honor your ancestors.
Right, because and again, people from different cultures, when you hear Day of the Dead, it kind of, you know, startles you. But like you just said, it's a way of remembering your ancestors, which there's no dishonor in that. We stand on the shoulders of some powerful
people. Exactly. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And they get, and the more we are connected with our ancestors, the more they are able to help us out of situations. But the reason we're lagging is because we are afraid of them. Now, we'll go to Halloween all day long and go knocking on people's candy, but will we honor our grandmothers and our great-grandfathers and those that are connected to us in Mali, in Senegal, in Congo? No, we won't do it. Because that's a part of our spiritual connection that has been severed and cut off. But we're coming back to it little by little, bit by bit. And thank you for this conversation.
I've got to repeat what you said, because that's so profound. What I heard you say was that we will dress up in Halloween scary costumes with no trepidation, but will we honor our ancestors, which is exactly what the Day of the Dead is about.
You got to say that. Yes. You can go to the stores right now and find the skeletons. You can go and find all this stuff at the stores that's been taken from people's indigenous way of life.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I want to move to you, in addition to one of the other aspects of your very diverse, wide-ranging life, is that you are, in fact, a cultural entrepreneur, and even Greg Abbott, as you said, had to recognize that. But you have something called the Sisters of Isis product line. What is that? What is the product? How did this come about? How can we get it? Bring us up to date on the Sisters of Isis product line.
I started this product line because of what was going on with all my clients that I could see, because, like I said, a lot of the people that make products for us are really not for us. They're really not for our hair. Over-the-counter products will stunt the growth of our hair, right?
Yeah.
So I created this product because I was watching as I was growing hair and loving on my community. I watched what different products would do different things. So my son, I taught him how to manufacture the products, and these are just products that you can literally eat, you know, nut butters, oils, minerals, spices, things like that that we use to season our food with, and foods that we can eat. And we came up with this Sisters of Isis product line called Psy product line, so that we could help stimulate the follicle, moisturize the hair, put nutrients back on the scalp so that it can seep into the blood, so that our people can have something that would help them on their journey trying to find a way to moisturize and hydrate and rebuild their pH in their hair. And so I have a lot of people, this, the product line is very good for the entire body. So I have a lot of herbs and things that help to balance the oil glands. I have a lot of herbs and minerals that help to stimulate the blood flow, because what we are eating in our body is stopping the flow of our blood. So what is coming out of our scalp is eczema, seborrhea, psoriasis, hair loss, hair thinning. Those are things because of what we are putting inside the blood. The blood is the river. We say we have to depollute, you know, we have to not pollute our blood, because the blood is responsible for transmuting the nutrients, you know, transporting the nutrients to the scalp, which we call the papilla. But it, these products have been, I have so many testimonials about the products, and they are known for curing a lot of, helping a lot of mothers cure in their children, eczema with themselves. I'm working with some students now because I have a school, the only natural hair ancestral school that's on the planet right now. I have a school of young people, entrepreneurs that are using the product on their skin and how their eczema is clearing up. It's not a magical, topical, quick fix, because I'm helping them to understand, get off the dairy, leave the eggs alone, do not do sugar of any kind. And then with that in the product, then you start to see hair grow. You start to see your skin, you know, clear up. These products were formulated to help all types of hair. It helps with people with relaxers, people that are going natural, people wearing wigs, people wearing, you know, sew-ins, crochets, braids, those kind of things. Because what we don't do is take care of our hair, because our hair was stolen from us, and the care of our hair, what didn't follow us from generation to generation. Back in the day, we used Crisco to oil our scalp and to oil our hair, or to press our hair. We used, you know, the pressing greases that were out there, the Blue Magic and things like that. But those things were, you know, full of petroleum and, you know, with and lanolin, and it would stop the growth of our hair. The same thing that we're doing today is what we had to use yesterday. But now there's some things that we should start thinking about in terms of what we need and what we can use to stimulate our follicle.
Okay, now how can the public get these products? Sisters of Isis products, how can they get them?
You can go online, naturallyisis.com, and purchase the products online. And I'm telling you, it helps with treated hair. This is it helps with dry scalp. It stimulates hair growth. It contains natural nut butters and proteins and minerals. People can actually eat it. You leave it on your shelf, not like how you leave a Just For Me on your shelf or some of these other products, and a child gets it and eat it. These products will not harm anyone. The product contains herbs, minerals, and vitamins and proteins, and that's what we get from our natural food base that we are putting in our bodies, you know, our lemongrass.
So the public that might want to try out some of these products that have such naturally based remedies, they can get them by going to naturallyisis.com. Naturally Isis, and Isis is ISIS. Naturally Isis altogether.com, and you can purchase the products online. And I'm assuming if they come to your salon, are they available there as well?
They run off the shelves at the salon. Yes, and I chose not to go mainstream because I don't want to put any chemicals in these products. I teach a Crown Kids camp every year So I did a camp this year, and I literally had them make their own products. Everything don't work for everybody. You know, everyone can't use coconut oil. Everyone can't use, you know, sunflower oil. So we found out exactly what was compatible to their skin and their scalps, and they made their own products.
Okay, now let me say where your salon is again, and the salon is Institute for Ancestral Braiding, and it's on Preston Road. The address is 17290 Preston Road, and it's Suite 104, and this is in the North Dallas area, the Preston Road area, 17290 Preston Road, and it's Suite 104, and you can come to the salon there, and as Isis just told us, the products run off the shelf. So you run to the salon so you
can and get your products.
Right, exactly. Now, we're getting close to our time to wrap up, but I wanted to maybe hear I just want to hear one more story from the book. And the book, everybody, is Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories 400 Years Later. And we talked about this just heartbreaking experience of Chandra Lewis, who was one of Isis' clients. And she had gone to a previous hair person, and the procedure that that person used caused her to lose all of her hair in the top. And it was so devastating for this woman, Chandra Lewis. She took her own life. She committed suicide. And we were just discussing that. That's just such a classic experience about suicide. You're so down at the moment. You're so overwhelmed by the bad experiences. You don't see beyond that moment in time to tomorrow. So if Chandra Lewis had been able to just hang on, she could have been one of the women who proudly now walk around with parading their baldness with pride, their head up and shoulders back. But I wanted to hear one or two more stories from the book, these black hair stories. Are there other experiences that you relate in the book that you want to tell us about?
You know, I don't have the book with me, and there are like 50 stories or more in the book.
About 50 stories in the book, okay.
Yeah, there's like 50 stories in the book. And I can also tell you that the weaving techniques that a couple of people talked about in the story with using the needle, how it punctured the scalp of these different women and left on their scalps. And how during the time where they back during then they were using what is called the pole method, the pole P-O-L-E method of weaving, and this is what the cosmetology schools were teaching, and you had to be certified in. Well, that has caused a lot of women to go permanently bald. So that also is a story that's in the book. And just looking at the scalps of these women that had abused their scalps by, you know, going to these different stylists.
Right.
You've never seen it before. It's like it disfigured their whole skull. Their scalp is just disfigured, and it's dented. You know, they have these dented spots in their scalps from using the needles so much. There are other women that talk about weaving their hair, like gluing their hair, and how, you know, they couldn't find different products that were out there for African-American or black women that weave their hair. So they would just rip the weave off, and all the hair would come off. Then there are women that also would take a wig and actually glue the wig inside and put it on the bald spots of their hair and wear the wig on their heads for like 4 and 5 months. So there's some crazy stuff, crazy stories in there about what we do to, you know, to be accepted and to feel, you know, feel pretty and to be exposed in public.
And just to sort of begin to wrap up, what is the takeaway message that you want readers to experience as they read the book? What is the point that you want them to get, the message that you want to portray to readers as they read this book?
It is the same method that all the young children, all the children of the world, this new harvest of energy for the children, loving their hair as God intended. That's the whole reason for this book and sharing these stories. Going the second mile for yourself, standing up for yourself, learning how to care for your hair and not being so anxious to wear a style that may not be conducive for your hair. But the main thing is learning to love your hair just as it grows from your scalp and learning more about, because in the book it talks about different herbs and oils and different foods and things that you can use and internally and externally to stimulate your follicles. But just learning what works for your hair, what products are good, you know, can I use jojoba oil? Is sesame seed oil better? Is sunflower seed oil better? What oils to use? Learning more about the hydration of your hair, drinking more water, and using water to moisturize your hair, learning how to care for your hair. If you go to a stylist and you want a style, if they're going to comb your hair with a comb that's pulling your hair out, if you're transitioning from chemicals and you want to go natural, how do you do that properly? Learning to love your hair and giving yourself a chance to be a real spirit in nature, to be a divine spirit in nature, and to know that God didn't make any mistakes by giving you curly, coily, kinky hair.
As we're wrapping up, I want to remind the audience that you can look in the chat and you will see the name of Isis Salon. You'll see the address. You'll see her website where you can order her products. So look at the chat and you'll find all of the information there. As we go, you mentioned about some forthcoming books. Do they have titles yet or what? You said there are two more books coming up. Can you name those two books again?
Okay. I think the one that's coming next is a children's book. So I have two books out, Living My Life Through My Ancestors' Spirit. That's the one book, and it's more pictorial. So it's a lot of pictures that tells the story about me. Okay, so I think the third book is called Olayinka, Nappy Hair and the African Beaded Comb. And Olayinka's Nappy Hair and the African Beaded Comb. That's a children's book. It's going to be really fun. That's going to be very, very educational for our children and the children are standing up. Like I said, this is a harvest for the children now. They're standing up for their natural hair. They're letting their parents know, no, I don't want relaxers. I don't want to alter my natural state. And then the fourth book is The Courage and the Courage.
There will be a fourth. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. The fourth
one,
what?
And that's the one I want to tell the whole story about the state of Texas versus ISIS. That would be the movie. It's called The Courage, Victory, and Economic Liberty.
Now, economic
liberty.
You made me remember there was a documentary of some kind done on your life story. Am I right? Some kind of documentary?
Yeah, there's a small documentary done by IJ, Institute for Justice, and it's called Isis Brantley's Story. But we're working on the full-length story that's coming out. Oh, it's going to be so amazing. So we're just trying to put the supporters and the sponsors and the philanthropists all together so that we can do this film.
Isis Brantley, we are forever grateful for you sharing your just overwhelming life and your talents and your dedication and your spirit and your Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman ancestry that you're standing on and following the tradition that they set for your Marcus Garvey spirit, all of that. We are grateful to you, and I know that you will continue to fight for our culture and our ancestry, and we love you for it, and we thank you for it, and we want you to go forward and conquer. Thank you so much for being with us. Before we go, any parting words before we go?
No, I just love this life. We have a chance to reset everything and rebuild, and that's what we're doing. And thank you so much for your purpose and everything that you've brought to our community.
Thank you. All yes. Right, bye bye now. We will talk again. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, everyone, that was a wonderful conversation with Isis Brantley, and she's an ancestral braiding guru, and she just doesn't stop. She she is just all over the place, and she has such a depth of information and research and knowledge and skills that relate to our hair and our ancestral honor of our hair, and we're grateful to her. I wanted to make at least this announcement tonight. This is Wednesday, September 22nd, and so tonight at 7 p.m., Friendship West Baptist Church will host a critical conversation on the 87th Texas Legislative Session. And Dr. Frederick D. Haynes III, who is the senior pastor, and he's also a renowned social justice activist, and some other men of the cloth. One is Reverend Daniel Ayers, pastor of justice there. They will discuss the laws that have recently been passed. I think they passed on September 1 after the signing by Governor Greg Abbott. And they're going to discuss what those laws actually mean and the impact that they negative impact that they will have on underserved communities. And they're going to discuss ways that the public can organize in response to these new laws. Now, the Friendship West Baptist Church will host this event on Facebook and on their YouTube page. Now, many of the bills came into law have a direct impact on black, brown, and poor communities. And the laws were passed, they're far-reaching into local government affairs. And here's a quote that Dr. Haynes said about him. He said, the leadership in the state of Texas continues to push an ableist, anti-black, homophobic, misogynistic, an anti-human political agenda. He said faith leaders must educate the church and community about these critical laws, but also have an organized response to ensure that our civil and human rights are safeguarded, because the stakes are too high to remain silent. He says, we must engage in advocacy and activism. And you can get more information about what is called a critical conversation. Go to the church's website, www.friendshipwest.org, www.friendshipwest.org. It's free and it's open to the public, and it's being presented through the church's Facebook page and through YouTube. It's at 7 p.m. tonight, Central Time, and tonight is Wednesday, September 22nd. So we want to tune into that, and the church's social Justice Ministry at Friendship West Baptist Church is sponsoring this. We want to know what these laws mean to these underserved communities. We want to know about the impact, and it's a negative impact, that they will have on our communities. So it's going to be very informative. So I urge you to tune in. Now, this has really been a week of things going on. But in the previous weeks, there's just a lot of events that we want to talk about. But currently, the mayor of Dallas has alerted the public about a trend that's going on, and the local newspapers have been covering it. And one of the reports was called that a panel looks into the rise in hate crimes. Oh, can you believe it, that there has been a rise in hate crimes? And so in recent days, Dallas Mayor Eric Johnson publicly brought this to our attention. And the local newspapers have done in-depth reports about this trend. And so during the press conference, the mayor had pulled together representatives from diverse communities throughout the Dallas area. This was about several days ago, and he announced a new advisory council to confront this increase in hate crimes, if you can believe it. Now, it's a 16-person group, and it's called the Anti-Hate Advisory Council. And they will advise the city and the Dallas police on how individuals can respond and how authorities can respond to the new threats and the old prejudices that are related to hate. Now, its creation comes just as the Justice Department released a new data about 2 weeks ago showing that there is a 42% increase in hate crimes nationally since the year 2014. And that increase has been felt here locally because Dallas police report 38 hate crimes in 2020. Now that was an increase. Now, get this, that was an increase of 171% over the year 2017. Now, this comes out of this federal report. Meanwhile, Texas has reported, we actually reported fewer hate crimes last year, down from they had been 4,008 and they dropped, I'm sorry, they had been 408 and it dropped to 406. But however, only 180 of them were reported in the year 2017. And the mayor says he's concerned. He says, we're concerned because the temperature seems to be rising in the rhetoric. And he says, if you look at social media, he says, it's hard to take. He says he tries not to look at it, tries to look at social media as little as he can because it is so hateful, so hate-filled. And he says as an elected official, he has to, but he said if he didn't have to because of his duty, he wouldn't because there's so much hate there. He says we want to be aggressive and proactive about educating folks and emphasizing that our diversity is our strength And he said, the mayor of Dallas, Eric Johnson, says, and we want to be aware that we are a welcoming city. At least we'd like to think that we are. So we want that. We don't want that to be a major problem here. And it also this hate in addition to people of color, it targets people in the LGBTQ community. It also has targeted Jewish people. And so hate crime is up. So this cross-section of groups has come together. And now let's see. So there are about four co-chairs in this anti-hate council. And one is the minister of the Dallas West Church of Christ. Another is the chair of the Community Security Initiative of the Jewish Federation of Greater Dallas. Another is the board chair of the North Texas LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. And another is the president of the Financial Services for Capital One Financial Corporation. And there's a cross-section of other members. And so they're going to come together and put their heads together to try to see how they can fight this surge of hate crime. Now, nationwide, race was the most common motivator for hate crimes in 2020. Race, ethnicity, or ancestry accounted for about 64% of reported incidents. And then most 2020 hate crimes in Texas, that was about 35%, they involved anti-Black prejudice, while 13% involved anti-white bias, if you can believe that. And these were the figures that came out of the federal report. Now in Dallas, most incidents were motivated against African descendants, and one of the committee members, Sammy Berry, is the minister of the Dallas West Church of Christ, and he's the chair of the Dallas Area Preachers and Church Leaders Group. And he's on this committee. And here's what he said. He said, I serve this city because I love the city of Dallas. He said, I look forward to working on some of these things that I don't like about the city of Dallas. And that is one of them is the increasing trend of hate, violence, and other hate crimes. He said, it's important that we all have a clear definition of what a hate crime is and what it looks like. He says we need to look at the value system, the policies and laws that allow hate to continue to exist. And now another member of this anti-hate council, his name is Gary Sanchez, and he's the board chair of the North Texas LGBT Chamber of Commerce. And he said Dallas is seen by other towns as a place where people can be their true selves. At least we'd like to think so. And everyone deserves to feel safe and respected as they walk the streets. He says Dallas must and will step up to be a beacon, he said. He said, the city that shines bright where everyone is welcome and hate is not tolerated. And tolerated, he says, is the key word, because when you tolerate something, you act as if you're not aware of it, that you don't see it or hear it or feel it. But he says, we can't tolerate, we must take the stance that we will not tolerate this trend. Now, two other co-chairs have said that they're going to be very, very proactive in this. And then one of the chairs, Let's see, Sherry Goldberg. She says there's strength in numbers. And she says, I know this step to bring everyone together will make our city even better. At least we'd like to think that it will. And so now one of the committee members says, now it's up to us to make the magic of working together to make it happen. It says, when you bring these two things together, which is common humanity and the rich diversity of different people, it's said that you make magic. And so the committee says it's up to us now to make this magic happen. And so hate crime. Who would have thought that in this day and time that there would be a rise of hate crime rather than working for the common good, rather than the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood, rather than the spirit of unity and working together for a common cause, we're at each other. We are attacking each other for our differences rather than counting on our strengths when we work together. And we do not want to allow that to happen. Before we go, I want to talk about this real quickly, about this effort that Texas should join other states in observing the International Underground Railroad Month. Now, officials have declared September is International Underground Railroad Month, proponents are urging our governor, Greg Abbott, to sign on to make to bring Texas into this. Last year, several other states joined in with observing this this movement, which came out of Maryland. Now, Maryland adopted the proclamation in 2019, and they chose September as that month. And they chose September because two of America's most well-known freedom seekers for coming out of enslavement were born in that month, and they were Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass, and so that's why they chose that month. And so other states that have signed on with Maryland include New York, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas, but right now no Texas. So we got to light a match under Governor Greg Abbott. Now, the head of this movement is a woman by the name of Diane Miller, and she is program manager for a National Park Service initiative that's called this name, the National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom. And the program seeks to document historic sites related to freedom seekers in American history and to tell their stories. And Miller and her team have been spreading the word to recruit more states to adopt this initiative. And so we want to do what we can to light a match under our governor. Now, Texas's history in this area is not well known, and it's just not coming to light that as historians from North Texas and other universities have said that the Rio Grande Valley, that our state was a key point also in the Underground Railroad, when hundreds of those who were escaping enslavement came to freedom through our land to Mexico or the Caribbean nations. And that's the reason the September a recognition includes the word international because they came through here to Mexico and Caribbean nations. And so the lady who's helping to lead this said that enslaved people escaped to many nations, not just Canada. We hear about them going to Canada, but they escaped to other nations as well. And so we want to see if we can get Texas to join in on this initiative. And so it's time for us to sort of get ready to say goodbye. I want y'all to remember to tune in tonight now at 7 p.m., which is tonight, Wednesday, for the critical conversation led by Friendship West Baptist Church, the Social Justice Initiative. I'm going to talk about the 87th Texas Legislative Session and all of these laws that have been that were signed into effect on September 1 by our governor and the negative impact that they're going to have on underserved communities. We want to really, you can go to friendshipwest.org and the event is free, open to the public. And you can also tune in to Friendship West Baptist Church's page on YouTube to get in on that conversation. So, we've talked about a lot today. I'm just so impressed with the efforts that Isis Brantley is putting forward in her book, Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories 400 Years Later, and how she's making us aware of just the significance of hair in our culture. And she says there are three different, types of hair, Afro hair, Asian hair, and Caucasian hair. And that our hair is one of the really outstanding types of hair. And the pride that came out of the motherland about our hair and the messages that have come historically through braiding hair, and how beautiful some of those designs and styles of braiding, and there are all kind of stories about how even routes you could look at someone would braid a style into your hair as descendants of Africa, and it could tell you what route to take to freedom. There were just so many, almost like the quilt that we use our hair. And so we want to, as Teddy Pendergrass tells us, we want you to wake up. We want everybody to wake up and no more sleeping in bed. We want to be aware. We don't want to think backwards anymore. We want to think ahead. And so we want to adhere to Teddy Pendergrass' message to telling us to wake up. Blue notes. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. It's time to think ahead. The world has changed so very much from it. You see, there's so much hatred, as the Mayor Eric Johnson is bringing our attention to this rise of hate crime. Why not a decline, but no, a rise of hate crime. So there's so much hatred. There's so much war, the war in Afghanistan and how it's escalating. And, oh, my gosh, so much hatred, so much war, so much poverty. We look at Haiti and how the people are just trying to pour out of Haiti, just trying to seek a better life, try to come to our shores. And now we hear the devastating news being carted back. So wake up, everybody. Wake up. Wake up the teachers. Wake up the builders. Wake up the doctors. The world won't get
no more anything. Back to thinking. Time for thinking ahead. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty. Oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well.